Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, there's a war taking place, and it's a war that a lot of folks may not be aware is actually underway. They may hear about various aspects of it, but don't realize just the extent at which this war is being waged. Let me read this to you. It says, the environmental movement has helped produce significant improvements in the world around us, from cleaner air to the preservation of natural wonders such as Yellowstone. But in recent years, environmental activists have arisen who regard humans as public enemy number one. In a provocative new ebook and an associated documentary as well, Wesley J. Smith exposes efforts by radical activists to reduce the human population by as much as 90% and to grant legal rights to animals, plants, and Mother Earth. My guest on the program now is Wesley Smith. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's also the author of a number of books. I had him on the broadcast a while back to speak about this one. The title is A Rat is a Pig is a Dog is a Boy. It's specifically talking about the human cost of the animal rights movement. And it's talking about the idea that there's very little difference with these folks, anyways, of the value between a rat or a pig or a dog or a boy. He's also got other books out as well, and maybe we'll get a chance to mention a few of those on the program today. But specifically, we want to talk to him about this brand new ebook, War on Humans, and the associated documentary that's available as well. Wesley, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to see you again.
It's good to see you. Wesley, what's going on? What has changed in this environmentalist movement?
Well, you know, I'm worried very much that the environmentalist movement has had the radical fringe that basically are anti-humanists, that are deeply loathing of their own species, that it is moving from the outer fringes. Back in the 70s, you had things like deep ecology. But that attitude is now moving into the mainstream of environmentalism. Hmm. That's not only going to be bad for humans, it's going to be bad for the environmental movement, because people are not going to respect or follow an idea that basically says they're the enemy of the planet, they're the cancer on the earth, they're the vermin species. It's very disturbing, and it's very, very destructive.
Give us a couple of examples. What is being said or what's being done that conveys that type of philosophy now that humans are the problem, and if we could just get rid of them, then everything will be fine?
Well, one of the probably most prominent environmentalists in the world is Sir David Attenborough of the UK, who's well known for his documentaries focus on nature and wildlife and so forth. He has said that human beings are a plague, that's his word, a plague on the earth, and he is part of an organization that supports human population reduction. I'm not talking about people controlling the number of children they have. He wants to see population in this world reduced not to the extent of under a billion, but still reduced. Now, why is that a problem? Let's look at the one-child policy in China. For decades, the Chinese tyranny has enforced a very pernicious and tyrannical policy that...
for a second there, the Skype connection has locked up, so let me just wait till it frees up here a little bit. Let me tell our listening audience something while we're waiting. During the break, we actually played a clip from the documentary. So we were able to, for the folks that are watching Sermon Audio, watching the broadcast today, Knowing the Truth radio broadcast out on Sermon Audio, they were able to actually view the part of the documentary, at least a trailer for it, if you will. Let me give you the website that you can go to watch the documentary for yourself. I've already watched it. It's about a half an hour in length. And they go into, as Wesley was starting to explain, some of the various examples of what is taking place. This isn't just hyperbole. This isn't just wild speculation. This isn't just one or two people on the fringe of the environmentalist movement. This is something that is now moving more and more into the mainstream. I remember not that long ago we watched a DVD that had not Kirk Cameron, but the other fellow that does some of the broadcasts with him, the apologist. His name's escaping me right now. But he was taking the microphone out, and he was asking some of the other folks, as part of the discussion that he was having, he asked them, if a dog or a human were drowning, which one would you rescue? And some of the people in that video actually, hesitated and said, "Oh, that's a good question. It's my dog." They would ask a couple other questions and things like that. If you don't think that this thing is going mainstream about a very anti-humanistic way of looking at this, I think you're in for a big surprise when you hear some of the examples that they give in this particular documentary. Let me give you that website so you can go out there and watch it for yourself. The website is www.waronhumans.com. That's www.waronhumans.com. Now, out there, you're going to get some information about the ebook. You're also going to get some information about Wesley himself, and then you're going to be able to actually watch the 31-minute documentary. We've got Wesley back with us now on the line. Wesley, you had started to give us a couple of examples. You gave us the first one is the only one that we were able to hear. So if you would pick up from there with a couple more examples, that'd be wonderful.
Girl, who's very famous for his documentaries, has wanted human population reduced, and he has extolled and accepted the China one-child policy. What does that involve? That has involved forced abortion. That has involved female infanticide. It's very tyrannical. And so you see that when you turn nature into almost a quasi-earth religion, as opposed to a human duty based on what I call human exceptionalism, our obligation to treat the earth properly, you can end up into very pernicious places. Let's also look at what's called nature rights. Let me describe for you and define what nature rights are. Nature, where life is reproduced and exists, has the right to exist, persist, maintain, and regenerate its vital cycle, structure, function, and its processes and evolution. That's from the Constitution of Ecuador, which has created a nature rights which are co-equal to those of people. Now, you might say, well, that's just Ecuador. Well, so is Bolivia. Well, you might say, well, that's just Bolivia. So has Santa Monica. I grew up in Los Angeles. I know Santa Monica like the back of my hand. There's no nature left in Santa Monica. So why would they do that? It's ideological. It's anti-human. It is an attack, first, on the unique value of human life, which is part of what this is about. And secondly, it's also an attack on, to be frank, the kind of free market system of the West. It is an attack on everything that has brought us so much freedom and prosperity over the last several centuries.
You mentioned that term, and I just want to make sure that we define that term for our listening audience. The term that I'm referring to is human exceptionalism. Let's talk a little bit about that. How do you define that, and how do you prove the idea of human exceptionalism?
Well, thanks for that. Sometimes I get in a little bit of trouble because people say, well, you're being hubristic when you talk about humans being exceptional. Well, what would you call us? Human exceptionalism takes in both sides of the human coin. Number one, we've already talked a little bit about it, the unique dignity of human life, the sanctity of human life, the higher moral value of human life over, say, animals and certainly over trees and mosquitoes. But the human exceptionalism also takes in the other side of the coin, which is we are the only species with duties. We're the only moral agents in the known universe. We are the only species that have obligations, a sense of ought, O-U-G-H-T. So we have obligations to ourselves.
We have obligations to our families. We have obligations to each other, fellow human beings, to respect rights and promote freedom. We have obligations to animals, to treat them humanely. We have obligations to the earth to make sure that our practices are responsible. In the Christian faith, it's about being stewards of the earth. What if you're a steward of the earth, who do you owe? You're a fiduciary, but who are you a fiduciary of? In the Christian religion, it's to God to take care of creation, right?
Right.
In your rights, you become a fiduciary of the living planet. And there is a huge difference between those, not only in the concept of what you're dealing with in terms of what it means to be human, but also in your obligations. One is going to be responsible, and the other is going to see human beings as just another animal in the forest. And if we think we're just another animal in the forest, if that's how we define ourselves, that's precisely how we'll act.
Hmm. It seems to me that we're seeing a lot of that doctrine that you just articulated. We see that doctrine in living color, like in a number of Disney films, especially the children's films and those types of things, where the people in the film are on the same par with the animals or the plants or nature itself. And
I think you're absolutely right, Kevin. And, there's always been some anthropomorphizing. I mean, you go from Mickey and Minnie Mouse, which is clearly a cartoon, to Bambi. You know, I remember when I was five and I watched Bambi's mother get shot, I cried and cried and cried, to the point now where you see that message being hit upon again and again. And one of the examples I give in The War on Humans in the book is The Day the Earth Stood Still, which was a very big movie back in first in the 50s, and then there was a remake a couple of years ago. And I think the difference between the original The Day the Earth Stood Still and the remake is very telling. In the original, many of your listeners might have seen this, where Michael Rennie comes to Earth in a flying saucer, lands in the mall in Washington, D.C., has this robot Gork. And the idea of the movie is that the space alien comes to Earth to save people from themselves because we're worth saving.
Mm.
And the idea is we've become too violent and we now have nuclear power. And they're going to make sure they would like to welcome us into the space community as equals. But we have to stop our warlock ways. And Gork is going to make sure that we don't take our violence into space. That's the premise of the original. In the remake, starring Keanu Reeves, that's an A-list Hollywood actor as they get, the space alien comes to Earth not to save humans from ourselves, but to destroy every human being on the planet to save the Earth. And the whole point of the movie is that we are a danger to the Earth, and that the Earth, strongly implied, is a living entity. The spaceships aren't flying saucers. They're Earth-like globes that come down. And there's even a Noah's Ark sequence where all of the species are being taken two by two into these spaceships to be held in safety while the great obliteration happens and then restored. And then we would have this pristine, beautiful, Edenic planet again, and the Earth would be saved because we're the enemies of the planet.
Mm.
The movie ends. I don't mean to if people, I don't want to be a killjoy in terms of the ending, but we talk Gork into not, I mean, the space alien into not killing us all. And as he leaves the planet, he pushes out a pulse from his spaceship and he renders us non-technological. He says that will be the price of not being obliterated. But if you got rid of human technology, billions and billions of people would die of starvation and disease. So you can see the difference between the original, which is humans are worth saving, to the remake where we must all be destroyed to save the earth.
Mm. That was very timely, too, as you were talking about getting rid of technology and then your phone buzzed right at that the proper moment. Very well placed.
You know, the original connection we had was not on this device. This is my cell phone, which we somehow rescued the interview.
Yeah, it worked out wonderfully. So we're not talking about...
it's called live radio.
That's right, amen. And we're not talking about just paper versus plastic. We're not talking about... trying to do some minor conservation efforts here. Their solutions to these problems are that we are the problem ourselves, and if we could just do away with us, then we would have a pristine environment, and that becomes the goal. What are some of the solutions that they're proposing?
Well, in addition to the radical reduction in human population, there's something called ecocide. Now, ecocide is very dangerous because it would criminalize large-scale development. Let me give you a definition of ecocide as being promoted around the world today by these radical environmentalists. Ecocide is the extensive destruction, damage to, or loss of ecosystems of a given territory, which, by the way, isn't defined, whether by human agency or other causes, to such an extent that the peaceful enjoyment by the inhabitants of that territory has been severely diminished. Please note that peaceful enjoyment of the inhabitants does not mean people. It means insects, grass, fish, snakes, whatever it might be. Hmm. It puts us on an equal footing with the natural world, flora and fauna, if you will, and criminalizes any kind of resource development that would interfere with the rights of these inhabitants. And what is the primary evil villain that the ecocide movement seeks to destroy? The Alberta tar oil shale development in Alberta, Canada, which will bring so much energy to the world, which can improve our lives, and yet they want to destroy it. Now, if this came to pass, you add nature rights on one hand, and let's say that's the shield that stops development, and then you have ecocide, which becomes the spear that punishes it as a felony, akin to genocide, I might add,
which
means that these people think that ecocide, meaning a large-scale development, is equivalent to Auschwitz. I've been to Auschwitz. I've been to Birkenau. I've walked that horrible railroad terminus where Jews were divided between slave labor and immediate extermination. I've stood in a gas chamber. Any movement that would equate the tar sands of Alberta, Canada, with Auschwitz has no business preaching morality to anyone.
And yet this is becoming mainstream, and the way that they're bringing it into the mainstream is under this broad heading of environmentalism or global warming is the terms, climate change. It's coming in under those umbrellas, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and the reason I wrote the book, if I'd written this book in 1980, someone could say, oh, well, you're just talking about the radical fringe, and they'd be right.
Mm-hmm.
But the radical fringe has eaten from the fringe into the center. And you see a lot of this kind of advocacy, like, for example, nature rights, in the global warming movement. Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, supports nature rights. It has been proposed for being part of the climate change treaty in the United Nations. And realize that under nature rights, anybody in the world has the right to bring a lawsuit to protect the rights of nature. And that means that what will happen is that the radical environmentalists, and they're very well funded, you know, just had this billionaire who's putting $100 million into political campaigns based on the global warming issue. They would, anytime anybody wanted to do a copper mine or the fracking to get natural gas, you'd have these environmentalist lawyers swooping down and bringing lawsuits on behalf of nature. Of course, nature would be oblivious to this. It would be these ideologues.
Yeah.
And we would be handing our economies, we would be handing our freedom, because there's also a very authoritarian streak here, over to people who don't believe in the sanctity of human life, don't believe in the unique value of human life, and it would be not only anti-human in an explicit way, but implicitly. Imagine the destitute people of this world who live in very resource-abundant areas just begging to be developed and lift up their economy so that they can have decent lives. They would be shut down with these kinds of attitudes. It is very anti-human. It is very non-compassionate, and it masks as compassion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had the President of the United States actually going around proposing a number of these things as well, just recently in California. as a result of the drought that was taking place there, which when I did a little bit of research on it, it seemed to be that one of the reasons that they're experiencing such a devastation as a result of this drought is because of what they did with the aqueducts that was related to trying to save a smelt, a bait fish. And so they had made them do away with
the
aqueduct system.
You're in my backyard. In my backyard. I'm from California.
Okay.
You fly over the Central Valley, which provides so much food for and so much plenty for the world. It is at least one third of it is now brown. You are keeping water, and of course we're in a drought now. But even when we weren't in a drought, it's almost like the farmers get the last call on the water. Protecting the smelt has become a huge cause among the far left here in Northern California and in California, and it's succeeded. I want to get back to a second for the message we were talking about that's being sent to your listeners' children.
Yes.
And we've talked a bit about the movies and so forth. One of the things I found most disturbing in my research for the War on Humans was advocacy to children. And I put a couple of examples in the book. I'm in the global warming section, which is probably the most mainstream environmentalist agenda item right now going. And I talk about two of them. I write about two of them. One is called No Pressure. It's an advocacy ad for what's called the 1010 campaign. And the 1010 campaign seeks to have people cut their carbon output by 10% and then convince 10 other people to do it as well.
Hmm.
And so this ad shows an elementary school teacher, and she's talking to her children about the need to reduce carbon. And the children give examples of what they might be able to do to reduce their carbon output. And then the teacher asks for a show of hands, how many of you are going to join in on this? And everybody joins but two. And she smiles and she says, oh, well, don't worry, there's no pressure. And she pushes a big red button on her desk, and the two dissenting children explode into blood and guts, not cartoon blood and guts, but very realistic. And the other children are splattered. And then she cheerily says to the children they can go now and, of course, be carbon friendly. There's another that I wrote about that was on the Australian Broadcasting Network or Corporation's website. The ABC is the equivalent of the BBC in the UK. It's the equivalent of PBS here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not some fringe radical group, right? On their website, they had what they called Professor Spinky's Greenhouse Calculator. It was a game for children. And the game told children how long they should live before they'd used up their share of resources.
Oh, boy.
And when you got to the point where you'd used up your share of resources, they had a cartoon pig explode. I mean, explosions seem to be really in this issue.
Yeah.
And this pig explodes because the message is, you're a pig. If you're a human being and you're using any resources, you're a pig. And so I took the game and I did to see how long it was that I should live, and it was 7.4 years. So Professor Spinky is a very tough grader.
Yes.
But he's telling children they have short lives because if they live too long, they're destroying the planet.
Oh, boy. Well, let me
this is why I call it the War on Humans. And really, it's important for people to understand this is no longer conservation, which of course is important. This is no longer stewardship of the earth, which of course is important. This is specifically directed at us as the enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And this has to be stopped, not only to protect our society, but to protect the environmental movement.
Mm-hmm. Well put, and thank you so much, Wesley. I'm going to give people the information about your webpage, about where they can watch the documentary, as well as where they can get the ebook. But thank you so much for coming on today to make us aware of just what's taking place and just how pernicious this lie really is.
Thanks, Kevin, and it's nice our technology got back together.
Yeah, we worked it out. No problem. All right, thank you very much. That was Wesley J. Smith, and as I was mentioning at the top of the book, he is the author of a brand new ebook that you can get out at this website. The website is www. waronhumans.com. That's waronhumans.com. The ebook is available out there by the same name, and so there is a slight cost for the ebook, but the documentary you can watch out there is absolutely free. So you can go out there and click on and watch the 31-minute documentary. You're going to get a lot of information about some of the things that are covered in the ebook as well. And so I highly recommend that you go out there. Wesley's with the Discovery Institute, and so you can find out some information about them as well. Again, the website here is www.waronhumans.com. Now, of course, from a Christian perspective, when we're talking about the value, the exceptional value of human life, we're talking about the fact that we were made in the image of God. God has created us, and we are made in His image. That gives us this value associated with human life. In addition to that, when man was first made and placed upon the planet Earth, when he was made ex nihilo by God, it's recorded for us in the opening chapters of Genesis, what we immediately see there is that He made man to have dominion over the earth. And so we have dominion over the animals of the earth and over the earth itself. You see, this new radical environmentalism that Wesley was talking about has turned that whole thing on its head. We are now the servants of the earth. We're subservient, not just to the planet itself, but to the vegetation and to the animals and so forth here upon the face of the earth. It really has devolved into a religion. It is approached with a religious fervor. You heard him talking about them advertising that people would find 10 ways that they could reduce their carbon footprint, and then they would go out and get 10 other people to do it. They have their own evangelists in this. They have their own collection plate. They have their own evangelists. They have their own doctrine. They have their own God in this. The earth and nature is God itself. And so it really has now, it's not just a difference between paper and plastic. It's not separating out your glass items from your cardboard items and your food items before you toss them into the trash. That's not what we're talking about anymore. This has gone much further than that. We now see that it's actually devolved into a religion itself, and the earth is what is being worshipped. We can see this on a number of fronts, not just in what Wesley was talking about here today, but watch the films very carefully. Even, I understand, I haven't seen it and actually don't have many plans to see it, but the new Noah movie that's coming out, I understand from talking to some people that have seen it, have said that there's actually elements in there where they're going to try to weave the global warming issues into that depiction of Noah and the flood. So it's everywhere. Every commercial we watch, it seems, every award show that's on TV, everybody is buying into this whole radical environmentalist. Well, it's a very pernicious lie, and there's some very serious consequences associated with it. Again, the website is waronhumans.com. Remember this, the Lord Jesus Christ said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.